Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourselves up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economic. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control buildings and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for a lead. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations who got the money. That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money from the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk own and control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March for what? Who cares? Marches never changed anything.
All right, time for another installment of It's My House. And today, we'll be talking about 996. Exactly what is 996? And you can apply it to anybody's life, be it business, personal, academic, what have you. So, of course, we always start off here with some morning motivation. So let's get to it with Steve Harvey.
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said, this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. He messed around. He saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he's here. He said, nah, I won't know what's in the door. He said, you sure you won't see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And in the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings. All of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you having is, when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it, because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on Not Meant to Be Way, because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on Pity Way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off, because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she's been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad, Cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he will come.
Okay, we got a little caught up, a little slight technical difficulty, but we're all right here. Okay, we're not quite through with our morning motivation, but once we get that queued up. All right, today we're going to talk about, we'll talk about anything you guys want to talk about, but what I want to start off with is, because we're sort of going from last Thursday's interview with Freedom Georgia, one aspect that you can apply to anything you do is, and I just ran across this like over the weekend, 996. Well, exactly what is 996? And I'm as I look for this audio that we usually play of Jamarian Styles. 996 is, well, and let me read today's title in the field. 996, if you don't work 996, others will do it. Now, this, I'm going to apply this as two examples with students in Japan and China, and part of the corporate world in Japan and China. And 996 means start at 9 a.m., work till 9 p.m., 6 days a week. Now, let's start off with the, you know, why many Asian students, and let's say not all of Asia, but Japan and China in particular, a lot of their students put in 12 hours a day. Now, it's not 12 continuous hours. I mean, they have a lunch break. They have a dinner break. There's a nap time. But they typically put in more study time, more classroom time into their academics. It's not so much that they're smarter than anybody else. It's that they just put more time into it than maybe some other nations. Now, let's carry this over to the corporate world. And it's not every business or corporation in Japan or China, but 996, and they have videos on this on YouTube. I think the videos on YouTube, to a higher degree, are from a Western point of view and their philosophy. So I cherry-picked that, but the positive stuff I got out of it, you know, you have a work day from 9 a.m., to 9 p.m. at night, and there are some breaks in there, all right? But it's just putting more into the work day. Now, Jack Ma, who, you know, of Alibaba, who's a billionaire, he considers 996 a blessing. And the way I see it, it's a blessing as well. And he states that, not only him, but others say it too, if you don't work the 99 or apply the 996 methodology to whether you're a student, a worker, or an entrepreneur, then if you don't do it, others will do it. All right. So, and that's essentially, once again, it's based on a 12-hour day. Start at 9. Work till 9 p.m., 6 days a week. You take one day off. Take one day off on your grind. And there are many ways that you can apply that. You necessarily, I mean, if you have an assistant or a partner or a team of people that you're working with, you know, you can you can easily do the 996. You can put in 9 hours a day on your project if you have a team. In other words, you might not individually work for 12 consecutive hours, but if there's a job to be done, you might work for those 9 hours. Let me simplify it. Let's say you might work three of those out of nine, well, excuse me, 12 hours. All right, this is similar. You might work 3 hours. You might have a team of four. Okay, a team of four people, and you work 3 hours, and then each teammate works 3 hours a day, and you got your 12 hours in. That's one way to do it. We've played Factory City on here, which, if you're not familiar with the documentary, Factory City, some of these companies have teams of 25 to 35 people on the team. And, you know, that could span over 12 hours. That could span out over 24 hours so they can get the output out. So 996 doesn't mean you personally, on an individual basis, have to work 12 hours a day. No, no, you just, whatever job that you might have, you know, if you organize a team, and like I say, if you got a team of four people, and you each work 3 hours a day on it, 3 hours a day isn't a whole lot of time. You know, it's better than, you know, the 9 to 5, 8 hours. But if you can get 3 hours of quality time, then you can make that work. So anyway, there's a bunch of videos on it. Like I said, it's told from, most of those videos are told from a Western point of view. But I just reframed the whole thing and looked at it. All right, what if I had a business? You know, if I wanted to employ the 9-9 concept, you know, here's how I would do it. In any event, No Excuses Basketball with Jamarion Styles, and we'll go to the phone lines.
Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarion Styles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarion. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarion took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But, man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarion, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, shoot it! So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarion Styles. The kid no one would pick. Was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarion can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
All right, we play the Jamarion Styles practically every morning to start the live stream off because with Jamarion, and I've reached out to him twice. I'm going to keep on trying until I get him. But what I like about his story is, now this guy had no hands. He had two stumps of his arms. And most people in that condition wouldn't even think about trying out for the team. But like in the story, he went to the coach and pleaded his case, and the coach told him, well, you know, go out for the team. So, that's the first thing, just going to the coach, because most people wouldn't even build up the nerve. They would just say, I don't have any hands. It's impossible. You can't play basketball because you need two hands. You know, you got to have hands to catch the ball. You have to have hands to shoot the ball. So, but he did something crazy and extreme, or what we would think would be crazy and extreme. He went and had the audacity to ask the coach, or plead the case of the coach, and because, of course, the coach said, well, he didn't discourage him. He said, well, go out for the team. So he went out for the team. He made the team. Now, I know how those things go because I came up playing basketball. So, you know, the layup lines and obviously Jamarion, because if you look at, let's take the concept that we're talking about today, at least to start off, 9-9-6. Start at 9, put in a 12-hour day, six days a week. Well, Jamarion had put enough time in with whoever would play with him. He learned how to catch the ball. He learned how to play, and, you know, he probably couldn't dribble, but he knew how to catch, and he knew how to shoot, and he probably knew how to pass the ball. So he took what he had and developed those proficiently. Because as you heard in the audio, he sat on the bench. He didn't get to play in many games. But he showed up to practice every day. And he got something out of that, and as his coach said, he would be the first one in the gym before practice, and that's part of his 12-hour, you know, because 996 basically says you're putting more in than the person that just works 9-to-5. That's really the only distinction between what they're doing in some parts of Asia. As Western countries, they're just putting in more time. Same with the students. They're not so much smarter than any other student on the face of the planet. They're just putting in more time. So when Jamarion finally got in, he scored 2 buckets, 6 points, simply because he put in the time. And when the opportunity came in, he was able to produce. So I'm saying all that. I played with Jamarion practically every morning because if Jamarion can do it, because he made no excuses for himself. So if you're facing an impossible or what appears to be an impossible situation, what we can, the takeaways that we can get from Jamarion Styles is, start with what you have. Start where you are. Use what you have. Now, all Jamarion had was 2 stumps of arms. He didn't have no hands. But he learned how to use what he had to get better. And he did what he could, and he was able to make the team. And when he finally got into a game, he was able to score points where the person – that did, and to think about it, there's a lot of people that were able-bodied, 100% healthy, with both hands, but they never tried out for the team. So if you don't try, you're not even going to get into the game. So if you're facing a so-called impossible situation, no matter what it is, just think about Jamarion Styles and go from there. Okay, other than that, that's my rant on that. They do have plenty of videos on 996 on YouTube. They probably have some articles written on the internet. Go check in on that. Let's go to our caller line here, 773. Your mic is open.
Hello?
Yes, your mic is open.
Yeah, just one comment on the story about the young man, what you just said in closing, and I heard this somewhere. You miss every shot you don't take.
You know what? I got to put that in my notes.
I don't know.
You're right.
From
you miss every shot you don't take.
Every shot. You know, take. So DeMar knew that. He learned how you said, take the shot, take the shot. That's all I want to share. Thank you very much for letting me know. Thank you.
Thank you. Oh, man, I'm putting that in my notes. You miss every shot that you don't take. That you don't take. I had to write that one down. That's something to go by there. But you're absolutely right. Absolutely right. Let's see. Hold on, going back. Yeah, your mic is still open. Yeah.
One more. This is a sales pitch point. If you don't ask the person for the sale, you told yourself no. If you don't ask for it, whatever it is you want, you said no to yourself.
That's true. You know what? That reminds me of something. I was speaking to some high school, a buddy of mine, and it was a young lady in high school. Gorgeous, just gorgeous, but you know in a lot of people, a lot of other guys thought she was gorgeous too. Now this is a conversation that we guys are having like 30 or 40 years after the fact. Okay, so one of the guys ran into her in recent years, and he said she never knew that any guys liked her. And I guess by us all, I mean, just assuming that she had a boyfriend or whatever, or a social card was filled, none of us even bothered to say hello. So you're right. If you don't ask for the sale, you're saying no. I have to agree with that. And that's a good attitude, I mean, to remember that. I'm putting that in my phone, too, as well. Let's see. That keeps, because a lot of people say no. They defeat themselves by saying, no, that won't work. But you don't know if it'll work if you don't try. Speaking of which, now, Delmar, promote your program on Blog Talk.
Oh, okay, yes. We're still in construction. It is Fam Passion Showtime Reunion. And we are addressed is, well, actually, let me say it again. Fam Passion Showtime. No, I'm saying it right, I'm saying it wrong. BlogTalkRadio.com, Delmar America. And that's America spelled with two A's. And when you go there, you will get Fam Passion Showtime Reunion. And we are on a campaign to do two things. We are focusing on the family, reviving, restoring, and resetting the family in our society, because we show and explain how that the family unit is the first order of civilization. That's where humanity came from, man and woman, male and female. And that's our first government. It's our first business structure. And in our country, we have allowed that to slip away, and there's a lot of stuff going on that's not recognizing the potential and the training and the success that comes through family order. So we're emphasizing that. At the same time, we're on a campaign to create a nation's anthem prayer, Passion 365. So those two things going on. Right now we are in episode mode. You can go to, again, blogtalkradio.com/Delmar America. And spell America with two A's, and you will get my episodes on Family Passion, Showtime, Family Reunion, and you can go through there and pick out some of those recordings on those various subjects.
Right now, about how many do you have in the can now?
I'm into the 30s now.
Okay, great. Man, it seems like you just started, too. You got 30 already.
Yes, I'm going 5 or 6 days a week now.
Right.
So we're excited about that. We will be coming up with, I'll be sharing additional information later on as we continue to build and set ourselves up for the issues listeners to get to us. So thank you, LA, for that.
Okay, all right. I suggest people go check out. He's got at least 30 of them archived now. So right here on Blog Talk where we're at. And get some good information and motivation out of that. Okay, let's go to our next caller here. And we started off, but it's kind of open mic today, 996. If you don't work 996, others will. And 996 is essentially a philosophy of you start at 9 a.m., you work till 9 p.m., 6 days a week. And it's, you can find people that do that. Well, I know when my mother, when she was alive and when she was in her working years, because my mother was retired her first retirement was by the time I was like 14 or 15 years old. She was a registered nurse, but she used to work at times 16-hour days. What she would do is work an 8-hour shift and then work what she would call a double, another 8-hour shift. But by her doing that, because she was a divorced woman, she married again, but what she did, because she always had her own money, what she did was she was able to pay off her house years ahead of schedule, because essentially she would, whatever her house payment was, she would just double up on a house payment. So she sent in the regular house payment, and then the second full house payment that would go in every month would knock down the principal. So in no time at all, she was able to do that. I mean, she did it by basically working 16-hour days, you know. And plus she had a side business that today we call back then it called private duty. Today they would call it a nurse entrepreneur. So she was putting in those hours. And anyway, let's go to the next caller here. Area code 309, your mic is open.
Good morning. This is Chris Collins.
Good morning, Chris.
Sitting here and enjoying everything that's going on in the show today. Thought I would push into the queue and say hello and see if there's anything I might be able to add to it.
Well, Chris, now you've got a network there. For those who don't know, you share who you are, your organization, and what kind of work ethic might go through that.
Well, I am the founder of a charity called Housing Our People Everywhere. Our acronym is HOPE. And we want to teach our children that they are the solution to every adult's problem as we engage with them and utilize the skills that they have with computers and gaming and design the cities of the future as we put our high school students, our parole prisoners, and our job creation to ending our homeless problem, utilizing recycled material from natural disasters to rebuild the disaster and create a sustainable way of life doing it. That building a house that don't burn, don't absorb water, it's stronger, termite-free, mold-resistant, seismic, recyclable, build it without a dumpster, build it cheaper than wood, and get a 60% discount on insurance versus a wooden home. I happened to build a tiny house with a 13-year-old and a 16-year-old two Novembers ago. This is the third one. And they built the frame in 2.5 hours, and they had never touched it. They've never built anything before in their life, but they've never touched this material before either. But it's how easy it goes together and how strong it is once it's together and how long it'll last after it's together. So they built something that'll last 1,000-plus years and can be recycled 1,000-plus times and not lose any molecular structure during the recycling process. But it's more of what they get out of it when they don't touch a saw, but it's what they saw.
Okay.
Lillian left. She got
no, she's still in there asleep.
Huh?
She's still asleep. They brought her. I went in
there.
So she's on the phone, so she's, I'm sure she's wherever. It's not a, she's going in for a shot. I'm out. So she's probably doing some within that time frame. And she was just awake a minute ago. Daisy woke up. Yes.
Wait a minute.
I've got a phone call. Something.
Okay, wait a minute. Oh, let me. I'm trying to control my board here. Okay, Curtis, I had to mute somebody out. Repeat that. Chris,
are
you there?
I put myself on mute just so I could let whatever was happening happen.
Okay, yeah. I had the open mic that I muted out. But repeat that, though.
As far as who I am and what I am?
No, but we got that. You know, matter of fact, hold up. I just got crazy morning here. I want you and anybody else to comment on this. I just got a text message that fits into last Thursday when we had the founders of Freedom Georgia on, and tying to what you're doing. Let me read this, and then I want you guys to comment on it. All right, I'm reading this. This is a text I just got. Inside. And I'll try to post this on our Facebook page too. Inside an Airbnb co-founder's latest venture, building tiny backyard homes. Let's see. Airbnb co-founder Joe Gabbia is launching with two net zero tiny houses. In 2008, a few years after graduating, this is from Fast Company magazine. In 2008, a few years after graduating from design school, Joe Gabbia, hopefully I'm pronouncing that correctly, co-founded Airbnb, and he believes that the company succeeded because of its focus on design. Now he's starting a new company with the same ethos, but with a different challenge: how to build better tiny homes for backyards. Okay, I'm reading. Let's see. All right, the prefab houses will come in two sizes: a 430 square foot studio and a 550 square foot one bedroom, and are intended to serve multiple users. Now, let me comment on this right now. So far, to my knowledge, there is no hard and fast definition of what a tiny house is. Now, my definition of a tiny house is structures that are under 400 square feet. 399 square feet below is my definition of a tiny house. 400 square feet to maybe 600 square feet would be a small house by my definition. So, and then 500 square feet, because he's got one, you know, 550 square feet, I would call that a regular house. All right. But that's my, so there's no fat, hard and fast definition on it as of yet. Because for many people, 550 square feet, to, I guess the average American, that would be considered a tiny house. They don't see how they can live in it or whatever, because they say it's too just too small or whatever. But I'm just saying that there's no hard and fast, as of yet, rule on that. And on top of that, my definition, not only my definition of a tiny house is under 400 square feet, it can cost no more than $25,000 to build it and or buy it. Because y'all go to Washington, D.C., I can find something for 400 square feet in Georgetown, the Georgetown part of Washington, D.C., that'll cost you $1 million. So if it's above $25,000 in my book, but I'm just one person, it's not a tiny house. So there's no hard, fast, and definition on it. Anyway, so it's a flexible dwelling that can adapt to new ways of living, Gilbia says. The percentage of households with multiple generations under one roof has more than doubled in the U.S. since the 1970s. And some people may use it as a spare space for their in-laws. Others may use it as a home office or a space for creative projects or as a rental. And, yes, it could be used as an Airbnb, through the though the company isn't promoting it solely for that purpose. The houses can also generate more electricity than they use. Our first step towards a sustainable energy production is to use not very much, says co-founder Mike McNamara. So first, we made it really tight, really well engineered, and really energy efficient. It uses less than half the energy, the company says, of a standard size or equivalent house. All the appliances are electric, and the house can run off a row of solar panels on the roof. An optional second row of solar panels produces extra energy and can be sent to the main house, helping homeowners save money. The company handles the whole construction process, including surveying and getting permits. We are really, really focused on trying to eliminate the friction, through the design of an entire customer experience, McNamara says, and we think that in itself it can create a lot more demand. Okay, let's see. Starting in 2016, California passed a series of laws aimed at making ADUs, that means accessory dwelling units, that's another word for tiny house, or backyard house, let me put it that way, backyard house, easier to build in the state by overriding local zoning and land restrictions, recognizing that backyard homes could be one tool in addressing the housing crisis. Some cities like Los Angeles have also tried to spur construction of ADUs by experimenting with new methods of financing and other solutions. I have a little sidebar here. This is why I like the Amish and the Mennonite. The Amish and the Mennonite use social capital to build. They don't let banks get involved in the process. That's what another reason why I like, if you can't get together with friends and family to build something, then if this is just me and my crazy world, don't mess with it. But this, my dog wants to go outside. We're going outside in a minute. Okay. In 2016, 80 permits, it's a sunny day here in Florida, and she's itching to get up. Okay, wait a minute. All right, what we'll do is this. Because I don't want her yelping this whole way like somebody's killing her. Okay. And I'm waiting for my board to pop back up. Let's see. comments on what I just read. This is, once again, one of the founders of, Airbnb. Wants to launch a venture where he's got two basic cookie-cutter what he calls tiny houses that he wants to launch. So one is, let me look it up again. Okay, this I hate these things that we got to refresh. One's 550 square feet, and the other one is 430 square feet. I think it's a good idea. I don't know what the price tag is going to be on them. Chris Collins, your thoughts on one of the founders of Airbnb, his new venture with backyard houses? All right, Chris, I don't think Chris is getting his lights on. Okay, let me go. All right, this. Delmar, are you there? Okay. Nothing from Delmar. All right, Chris. All right, hopefully. All right, let's open up another one. Okay, 314 area code. Your mic is open, hopefully. I heard something.
Hey, what's wrong with your board, man? They doing you wrong. That gentleman was talking about those monolithic domes. It's fireproof, earthquake proof, hurricane proof if you build them in those vicinity. But you know, here's another thing. If you're building those type of structures, you got to have insurance. You got to have general liability, and you got to have workers' comp. Because if somebody get hurt, they're going to sue. And you have to be able to provide them with that insurance according to state laws. Then you got to have the proper insurance on your vehicles that you're using to transport material, equipment, like tools and so forth. Then you'll be ready to go. You got to have temporary electricity. You got to have a utility to come in and wire, run temporary electricity, and probably water, too. Because you need water.
Well,
for
if
your
you're building them,
if
you're building them like this guy that I just read the article about from Airbnb, with the backyard, with the ADUs, which that in many cities that's been on the books anyway. Your electricity can come right from the house. You know, the main house anyway.
Well, you still have to, if you're doing construction. I don't know what it is where he is. I don't know where he's from. But I know what it is.
I think he's talking about California, according to the article.
Well, hell, anything goes out of California. But I can only talk from my experience that you have to have a temporary different from the house. It's usually larger amperage, and it contains, you know, several ground fault devices. But then you'd be ready to go.
Right. Well, it's interesting that, well, I got, you know, there are a lot of people jumping on that bandwagon. It'll be interesting to find out how much those homes are going to sell for. Because some people are paying like $85,000. Or even $100,000 plus for a tiny house, which I think is a little bit excessive, but that's just me.
Yeah. Well, you know, I was only talking about the things that have to have in place. Your electrician's got to be licensed. Your plumber's got to be licensed. And then you got your carpenter crew.
Right.
They know the things that they have to do. And then a person go ahead and go to work.
Right.
You got to have your You got to have your excavators. They got some stipulations that they operate on. They got to clear the ground, grade the ground, so on and so on. They got to dig. You got to get permits to dig from the utilities company, because the utilities underground, because they would have
to
come out.
You got to pull permits on all that.
They would have to come out and show your utility runs so that you don't tear that stuff up. And while digging, electrical and water, and also the sewer lines. All those things are not as easy as they sound, although they do sound easy. But
well,
once you're up and running, if you're used to it, it's
yeah, I know in your larger cities, well, that, everything you're naming is basic requirements for a city. Well, I mean,
well,
the majority of the population, they live in most urbanized areas anyway.
Yeah, them electrical, those requirements that I just got you mentioned is throughout the state. And
right.
Just, now, cities may have some additional regulations like setback and height restrictions and blending compliance. You know, if you got a neighborhood that's, of course you know that, if you got a neighborhood of brownstones, well, if you come in with a contemporary design, they may not approve that. But I wouldn't want to build in that. Me, myself, personally, I wouldn't want to build in that area anyway.
What are you talking about, Los Angeles, someplace like that?
Chicago. Nobody's going to be, I don't think people, well, they are doing that type in Chicago, but the type that you usually talk about wouldn't necessarily be done there.
Well, I know Chicago. Man, you got to pull a permit on everything in that town.
But yeah, even if you put in a septic tank, which normally you got in the rural areas, what you're going to do, if you're going to have a septic field, all that stuff has to be regulated nowadays.
Right.
You can't put a septic
and,
field
and, yeah,
in
you
street.
Do need, well, the larger the city, you definitely need more regulation, because all you need is one person. Because I was talking to a friend of mine, he's into drones. And he says he got into drones kind of early as a hobby.
Mm-hmm.
But he says, it's kind of real regulated now, because some people came in and, did stuff like, fly a drone near airports, stuff like that.
Yeah, my grandson is working on his FAA 107 drone certification. Then going on into his palace. People, all those things are necessary. But if you know what you're doing, it's just another part of the game, another cost that's a part of the game, part of the venture that you're getting off into.
That's true. I want you to comment on this. I saw a video early this morning about carpenters. That there's a real big shortage of a demand for carpenters, because there's not that many there's a lot of that are retiring, and a lot of new people are not coming into the building trades. That's across the board. What are your thoughts on that? How can we get people, younger people, interested in the building trades?
Well, the building trades have their own input. They have their own apprentice program that they use to bring people in to train. And a lot of those trades have what's called legacy intake. I mean that their great grandfather was one. Their grandfather and their father was one. But like you say, If people, the kids don't go into them today. My grandson would have been legacy. He could have easily got into, say, the iron workers. Just walked right on in there. But and I kind of encouraged him not to do it. He didn't do it. Got involved in something else. one reason that particular field is very dangerous. And the other one's labor intensive. And your young people nowadays are so soft, as I would like to categorize it, that it's just not used to hard work.
Well, like, for instance, like what you built, I mean, very large structures. And I imagine there weren't too many black. I imagine how many other black folks did you run in that was operating at your level? I imagine it wasn't a whole lot of you. That's what I'm getting at.
Well, no, it's not a lot of us. Those, my workforce is 95% white males.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so blacks just don't get involved in that. You may have one or two. I had, you know, I used to work up with the 50 men or more.
Right.
And blacks just didn't want to work off the ground. Now you go some parts of the country, you have Indians. Like when I was doing a project up in Detroit, I had some Indians that came out of Canada. I think they were Navajo. I'm not sure. And they loved working off the ground. But black Americans don't. As a group, you find some, but very little.
Yeah, but all right, not only off the ground, but I'm just talking about just jump across the board with the building trades, people that are interested in becoming carpenters, iron workers, roofers.
You find blacks in carpentry, and especially in labor, electrician. One of my best friends was an electrician today. But you don't find many.
No. That's what this guy was saying.
Mm-hmm.
The numbers are like
and
really low.
In St. Louis, they had a construction training charter school, and I think it went out of business, just didn't have the intake. But those building trades have their own intake and system, was their apprenticeship.
Right.
And early on, mid and late 60s, you had these affirmative action programs trying to get blacks into the trade, and they don't kind of went by the wayside because the interest just wasn't there. And if you had somebody who was a previous family member, was seemingly out of those future generations, you do find those that like to go into those in those areas. Me, myself, I
was
like,
Harry, when I was coming up, I was sent mixed messages about trade school and the building trades. And in the earlier years, like even, you know, 8 years old in third grade, or even ninth grade, if I got out of line with my mother or something like that. Because she sent me to mostly private school. She said, I'll take you out of it, you know, and send you to a trade school. So you had a lot of parents that just, they looked down on the building trades and trade school. Meanwhile, while they're doing that, you know, you have other ethnicities that are coming in and becoming wealthy off the building trades. Now, then, after I got into real estate, she changed her tune on that and was talking about, you know, it was encouraging me to get tools, this, that, or the other, you know, to, you know, it, you know, pick a trade. So that's the way I see it. A lot of parents, it depends on what area you grew up in, a lot of them discouraged going into the trades. And then even, I worked at a trade school in D.C. for about 3 years.
I went to a technical high school, too, and it had everything in it. It had aero mechanic, auto mechanics, auto body, welding.
Uh-huh.
The high school had sheet metal, woodworking. It had cosmetology. It had pre-medical. It had
Well, you went to a
electrical.
Better school than I did. Now, the primary high school I went to was college prep. They offered nothing in the building trades. They offered one class that maybe with mechanical drawing, but that was it. They didn't even offer driver's ed.
Well, the thing is that, like I said, building trades have their own construction trainings for their apprentices. And building trades make a lot of our workers in some areas, they make as much as $160,000 a year. And then when they retire, they make close, their retirement is probably over $100,000 a year.
Now, see, that's another thing. Nobody... Now, see, the way you're breaking it down...
The annuities can accumulate as much as $500,000.
Uh-huh.
And then some of them have a vacation, so...
Pianchi, the way you just broke it down, that's the way... See, once again, nobody in my peer group, even when I was working at a building trade school in D.C., Phelps was, it sold out a social case, now it's Phelps Career Center. Nobody broke it down the way you broke it down. You know, how much you can earn, you know, retirement, none of it, you made it interesting and appealing. Because I know, like, at the vocational school I was at, a lot of those students, their dream was, although they were at a trade school, first thing, they didn't have enough, they couldn't staff the school for some reason. They couldn't hire teachers for whatever reason, or couldn't find teachers that wanted to work teaching children whatever their particular craft was. Most of the people that worked
at
the school.
That's because of those teachers' unions. But, you know, you had to, like, for instance, they had tracking systems when we was coming up.
Uh-huh.
And a student was assessed at the eighth grade. Maybe in the seventh grade, they start assessing students to see what they would be more apt for, what you had a natural inner talent for, whether you was you had a talent for computation. In St. Louis, they had track two, which was the technical, and they had track one, which was literary arts. And we had a school called Northwest High School. That was basically a literary arts school where people didn't get into the technicals and the physical. Then you had O'Fallon Tech and maybe one other, which was the technical and physical, like I made mention too. And you had to test on that. I mean, anything from taking blocks and putting them to shape. You couldn't put a pyramid-shaped block in a rectangular hole. Believe it or not, they even had those type of portions of the test, which include people being able to demonstrate. Then some of it was pretty math, was math intensive. And that's just the way it was. Everybody's not made out for everything.
Nope.
Right now, there's an effort to try to get people involved in aviation. And aviation today is not intensive as it was when I was flying, when you had to do a lot of your avionics yourself. But nowadays, they use GPS, and they got GPS systems. Now, I prefer learning the old way with what they call steam gauges and computation. Then move into the modernity, what they call glass screens on the cockpit. Because if those go out, then you got to get the plane off the ground safely and also navigate with conventional means rather than the technology that they have. There's all kind of backups too. That's where it's going to be a lot of futurism is going to lie in that area. The old Jetsons means of transportation will become a reality.
Well, they do. You're right. We're living in an age of Jetsons. So they are flying cars, drones that exist now. They just are not available to the general public as of yet.
Yeah, you can get drones. You can buy drones. And the FAA has restricted airway for elevation and so forth. But what's going to be drones is propeller. If somebody ever came up with a practical means of what we have become to know as anti-gravity, that's going to make a revolution in changes. Like Elon Musk is doing is revolutionary too, where he used those heavy lift rockets that would take a payload up beyond a certain altitude where it's not affected by the Earth's gravity and shove it on into space, then that rocket would come back and land right back on its landing spot. Even vertical.
Well, Jeff Bezos has done that already with, I've seen about two of his launches where, I guess if you call it the payload, it goes up and I guess releases the capsule or whatever. But then it comes right back to the launch pad.
Yeah, both of them have, with the engineering, with the old system gyroscopes and also artificial intelligence that's incorporated with the steering rockets, they've done a hell of a job with that. It's still, well, it's not perfect, but it's cost effective because you use that rocket over and over and over again.
Right.
But the Star Trek type of ships, that's going to be the future because they can land on the ground and they don't need no vertical propulsion system like we see with either with solid fuel or liquid fuel. The ones that Jeff Bezos and them use, there's a liquid fuel. And then you're going to have, if you're going to travel in space, you're going to have a propulsion system that won't include any fuel because there's no oxygen in the space. It's going to have to be of some other design. The possibility of mining asteroids is practical, it's not practical. It's a damn good idea. It just has to be figured out how you get that material back down to the Earth.
Well, I'm sure there's a hobbyist and an engineer somewhere working on just what you said. They're working on a way on how that can be done.
Yeah, and here's another thing too. Kids today don't have the hands-on practical things, especially in the city. They don't. So, back in our days, a lot of things used to go on in your garage. Your garage would be turned into a laboratory. It would be
that
a place
and
where you
the fact of, you're right. I mean, Apple computers started out of a garage.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. One of my foreman's stepson, him and another person, was making wafers. Semiconductor wafers, which was a dangerous chemical process. Now, I don't think they went any place because seemingly that when you're thinking about an idea, there's other teams around the world, especially in this country, that's thinking of these ideas. The education system here is really terrible, especially for black kids. And that ain't white folks' fault. That's black people, because they use them kids as a means of making money. Your kids come out of school, they don't know. And then by the time they reach a point in life, about 26, 27, 28, they start realizing that themselves, and they start rebelling, becoming rebellious. And industries are created. Government has nothing to do with that. You can't get that out of government. Your politician is some of the dumbest of the bunch. That's why they choose politics, because then you have ignorant people that keeps them there, expecting something. But it's not governments that do development. It's private individuals that do development, private individuals that come together as groups that do development.
You're absolutely right. Matter of fact, if anybody takes a look at the typical billionaire, and there's less than 4,000 of them on the planet out of practically 8 billion people on the planet, the common denominator that I've noticed with billionaires is many of them, if they didn't create the industry, maybe somebody else created it. It wasn't government. But like Standard Oil, Rockefeller, you know, he built an infrastructure of a network of, you know, filling stations who, I mean, they didn't exist until he put it out there. Airbnb, the idea of the vacation rental has always been out there, vacation rentals. We can go back 1,000 years on that. But what made A, and they haven't figured out how to regulate it yet, what Airbnb is and what Uber is and what Lyft is, they're apps. And so far, governments have not figured out how to regulate in that. California's, you know, now they're trying to hit it another way, but they haven't touched Airbnb. So you're right. The government doesn't... matter of fact, the program that we had on last Thursday with the ladies from, Freedom, Georgia, there's something that one of them said that's true. And mind you, these three ladies live in metro Atlanta. And it coincides with something that Claude Anderson said. You can march and protest and try to fix a problem in an established city like Chicago, Atlanta, D.C., Orlando, Miami, Seattle, Washington, all those places. But you're going to need a whole lot of money. You get a whole lot of political capital, whatever, where it is just easier. Now, you got to have a pioneer mindset, and 99% of the population is not going to do it. You have to go out. It's easier to build or create a situation that you want, rather than try to fix something that's already there.
Well, and that's only going to benefit a few.
That's true.
As far as richness is concerned. It's going to benefit. It's like people say, well, we need to start our own stores. Well,
right.
It's the way it is now. One store in a general location is going to serve X number of thousands of people. That's why that's what they tabulated for. You're not going to have no community that's one ethnic group unless nobody else want to move in. There's only two ways to have that. One, it's all your family, and then that still don't exist. But the most obvious way to have a community that's all one ethnic group is due to the fact that others don't want to live there. That's how that works. But people can develop towns all the time. In St. Louis, right outside of St. Louis, you got a town called Earth City. It's just there before, right there on the river to the west. And it spreads north and south, I guess, maybe 5-10 miles. For a long time, and I don't know if it still may be that way. You know what the population of Earth City was? One person.
Yeah, there are towns in the United States that have very few people.
Yeah.
Those
Western towns that they used to talk about, Dodge City, and of course Dodge City is modern nowadays. As a matter of fact, it was named after one of the individuals who participated in the Transcontinental Railroad. But those cities of the old days, the Laramie and Western Stills, they still there. Even some of the old buildings are there. So there's, there's people wanted to go out and develop those areas, those sparse lands. They still there, but nobody wanted to do that because it's very hard. Same thing in any country. Right. Hey, in Ethiopia, going down in the south where it's hilly and mountains, don't nobody live there. You can't transverse that land on roads. It's just impossible. But when you fly over it, you can look down and you can see little villages here, there, on mountains and so on and so on. So they're there. But all the conveniences and the means in order to make that work, you either go, it usually don't exist, you got to make it exist. And that, in fact, is where you start getting into a lot of planning to see if it, don't work on paper, it's not going to work in real life. And that's the way you have the means to do things now with technology and instruments of drafting and so forth. You can see if it's going to work on paper. Then you got to take it out into the real world and see if you can make it work in the real world. And if it don't work on paper, you might as well forget trying to work it in the real world.
I call it thinking on paper. All right, we started out people talking about 996 and people who came in later.
And you know, one other thing,
go ahead.
Quick. I got a friend. We talk, and her family. They live in Alaska in a remote area, and they had built a home, and they left and came back, and the otters had taken it over, so they had to build another home. Believe it or not.
Nature will take over. If you leave it unoccupied, nature will take over.
And the big problem there is getting materials into where they can build. Now, most people that does that building in the wilderness, they come out with their own lumber mill. You know, they got portable lumber mills where you just cut down the trees in the area where you want to build. You may have to, the trees that you cut down to clear a space may be the trees that you use after you mill the lumber to the mill sizes to build the structure, whether it's a log cabin or high up. But
I had a great uncle that did that. He only had like a formal sixth grade education, but he would make his own lumber and then build houses for, you know, people that are, you know, just getting started off, married and all that. Uncle Jose, that's what he did. Yeah, that's what he did.
Hard work, but you can do it. I've seen women do it. I've seen some white women do it. I never seen black women do it, per se. Not from the United States, anyway. Them Asian women do it. You've seen that too. Yeah, they got YouTube of Asian woman go out and build a home.
Yes, there are videos. I know of about two of them that Asian women solo. Okay, went out into the wilderness or woods or whatever, and sourced their own lumber, made their own lumber, and a lot of these basic skill sets, a lot of people don't have, although you do have some people that are picking up, you know, stuff here and there. But people, we started off with 996. What is 996? It is with some people, not all people in Japan, not all people in China, but I'm just saying those two countries in particular, between their students, because a lot of people say, why are Asian students so smart? It's not that they're so smart. Is that they put more time into it. 996 is you start at 9. Of course, the academic students in China and Japan, they might start the school day at 6:30 a.m. And they go 12 hours. Now, they have breaks in there. They have a lunch break. They have a dinner break. They have an exercise break. and they have a nap break where everybody just, all right, let's go to these dormitories and sack out. But they just put in the time. On the corporate or business level, 9 a.m. to 12 hours a day, 6 days a week. So it's not like anybody's smarter or even richer, but they put more time in, and it appears that they're smarter, and they do get richer. So that's what we started the day off with, and then we went to some, but it's open mic. We talked about one of the founders of what do you call it, Airbnb. They're going to start putting out their own model of backyard homes. So, Chris, are you there? Chris Collins?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
Yeah. Chris, I don't know if you heard me. Did you hear when I read the article about one of the founders of Airbnb? They want to start, manufacturing 430 square foot, what he would call a tiny house. And the other model would be like 530 or 550 square feet model, a tiny house. But that's his new venture. That's one of the ventures of any comments on that, though?
Yeah, definitely, because, we can not only do the Airbnb where they have the living situation, but we have a greenhouse to do fish, vegetables, and mushrooms all in the same room as far as the growing part of it. And that could be the food for the Airbnb, for them to have fresh food, and also, to contribute to the community. But, yeah, I actually sent my partner Carlos the phone number. I don't know if he's in the queue or nothing. But, this man has...
Carlos, if you're in the queue, because there's a bunch of numbers I don't recognize. Carlos, if you're in the queue, just press 1. We'll know you're there. Go ahead, Chris.
And, the building material that I have can build those Airbnbs. The one thing about these Airbnbs is that we can put these in every... You were talking about ADUs,
Right.
On every property in the entire country, people can have this extra dwelling unit, and some cities say that people have to be family, blood, or marriage to live on in the property on your property. So each of these cities all have different laws about this, but one of the things that your city does say, and people don't know it, is you can utilize up to a certain square footage of your backyard for an extra dwelling unit for living. And by doing that, you can automatically give yourself some extra income coming in to help subsidize what you're doing. But we can take these things totally off the grid. We do have 70 people working in Tennessee that are putting out 4 complete homes a day, and they're either where you hook them to the system or they're off the grid. And it costs about $10,000 is the total cost to take it completely off the grid. But for $5,000, when you're using it into the situation where it goes to the grid, it's only a $5,000 difference to take it off the grid. So we're going to take it and give it solar power anyway. So that's coming. So now the other part of it is, do we take it completely off the grid? And that's where the tanks come in and for the clean water and for the gray water and compostable, the toilets with the composting toilet. These are all options that are there, and we're ready to share them throughout the world. I mean, it's time to get this right. But we can build them cheaper. Like you said, Washington, D.C.'s got up to $1 million for 400 square feet.
And yeah, it's expensive up there,
It is expensive, but the thing is there's land right outside Washington, D.C. that's rural that isn't that expensive, And it does not cost us that much to build these things. So we can create affordable housing. It's just whether or not you want to live in the concrete jungle on the concrete, or would you rather go out and put down a foundation so that you have something that's concrete?
Well, I'm biased. I say, well, just like, and that's why I was glad last Thursday when we had the Freedom Georgia people on. And for people who are not familiar with the Freedom Georgia Initiative, it was founded by, well, it's three people, three ladies, three black women out of Metro Atlanta. And what they did, the long and short of it is, they ran across a piece of land 2 hours away from Atlanta. And they said, you know what, well, you talk to 10 of your friends, I'll talk. So between the three of them, they talked to maybe 30 people, and they came up with 19 families. And their first acquisition was 97 acres of land. And now they're up to 502 acres of land. Now, the thing is, what I like about, and here's a gold mine. I mean, a platinum mine, actually. They were willing to drive 2 hours outside of their normal comfort zone. 2 hours outside of their comfort zone, because there's no way that they could have bought 97 acres within the city of Atlanta, let alone 502 acres of Atlanta. It's just not there in the city of Atlanta proper. So they were willing to drive 2 hours outside of the comfort zone. And matter of fact, let me put this out there. A lot of the, not all, but a lot of the social problems and personal finance problems that people have living in a city like Atlanta, Seattle, Washington, Los Angeles, California, Miami, D.C., Boston, Chicago, all those places, if you would just drive, in some places, you can drive 30 minutes away. Other places, you might have to drive an hour away. These ladies drove 2 hours away and found their paradise. Now, if they're in the early stages. They've done campouts, and they're doing the planning right now because they want to take this to eventually a municipality. But for what they've done, if they scaled it, those three can end up billionaires. But you're not, and I did a podcast on this about 2 or 3 months ago. You're not going to find your promised land in Egypt. In Egypt are these well-established municipalities like Orlando, Miami, St. Louis, D.C. Those cities are controlled by other people. You can try to fix a problem. Good luck. I don't think you'll live long enough to do that. But if you would just travel an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours outside of your comfort zone, or if you're bold enough to step on a plane and go somewhere, there's an unbelievable amount of opportunity and inexpensive land all around the United States. The problem is most people are addicted to on the grid. And let me explain. When I say off the grid, here's how I translate it. I'm talking about you living in a house where there's no electric bill, there's no heating bill, and then there's no water bill. If you happen to get sick, your house is paid off already. That's when I say off the grid, that's what I mean. But in order to do that, you're going to have to more than likely step outside of your geographical comfort zone and go an hour, 2 hours, or 3 hours away to find a place where you can actually put a structure like that. But you do have people moving in that direction. Now, as you mentioned, Chris, for those who, for whatever reason, can't move out of the city, and your city allows you to do an ADU, which means accessory dwelling unit, put a tiny house in your backyard, instead of getting a loan on your, instead of refinancing your property, matter of fact, anybody out there who is considering refinancing a property or getting reverse mortgage or getting any type of institutional loan, I would suggest borrowing money is a bad option. Build your city, like in your city, if you can do an ADU, accessory dwelling unit, and have it in your backyard, have it built to, you know, whatever the local code says that you have to build it to, cash flow's the name of the game. Build it and have a cash flow coming out, and that way you'll have the money that you need instead of borrowing money. Because the way I look at it, if you have to borrow money, you basically have voluntarily enslaved yourself for whatever that loan period might be. If it's an FHA 30-year loan, I hope you don't get sick. That's all I'm saying. So I would suggest that. Now, for Chris, for people who want to let me throw out another crazy idea. With these three ladies that we had on last Thursday, you can start your own community. You can start your own town. You can start your own town. And that's what they're doing. And we're just talking about three regular women that they were smart enough to realize, you know what? And what motivated them was, you know, the George Floyd thing and some other these high-profile homicides. They realized they can't fix Atlanta. You can march. That's not going to do it. There have been you start your own thing. And you don't need a whole lot of people to do it. There are a lot of towns in this country they started with 19 friends, but it's unbelievable the amount of towns in the United States, most of them you probably never heard of them, they have a population of 10 people or less.
Yep.
But you need to have you need to develop the skills now. And that's where people like Chris come in at. So, Chris, what are some of the things that you can educate people on through your nonprofit?
Well, one, every one of you are capable of doing such amazing things. And we want to teach our first grade through eighth grade to mess with computers and design the cities of the future. And when that first grader pushes enter and that AutoCAD says that it can be done, all that gets sent over to a machine. All the material comes out of it, and people start putting it together. So the kids are actually learning that they can be in control of their mind, because their mind is amazing. It's so powerful, and they don't realize that every second of the day they're creating. But it's what they're creating. Is it positive or is it negative? You know, I taught a blind man how to do this, build a home. So I know that anyone that has the capability of thinking can change the world, because that's what it takes. And you don't have to be doing what you do. I want you to find what you enjoy more than anything else in life. That way you never work a day in your life. But we're not going to just have youth incubators. We're going to have human incubators, because we're the human race. You know, we need to stop teaching our children about racism, because that needs to stop. We are the human race. We're human beings, but we're not being human. And these are something that we need our kids to realize, that we are a melting pot of all ethnic groups. But we are the only race we are is the human race. And our future, you know, looks bleak unless we open our eyes, take the blinders off, and start saying hello again. People don't care about other people. And I want to teach them that they need to care about other people. Because when someone else has a problem, that problem causes you a problem. And we need them problems to stop. And I'll you know, there's a lot to learn. There's 1,000 careers, and it's totally up to the individual because no one can make up your mind for you. You are your own creator. Your destiny is yours. But do you have to have everything happen to you and you be alone and go through it alone? Or can we take some of that burden off of your shoulders? Definitely. But we have to be able to give a hand up, not a hand out, and stop, you know, being derogatory toward another human being thinking you're better than them. Because if there's people on the street that are suffering, guess what? Everyone out there that you're seeing it happen as you're seeing it, if you're not doing anything about it, you are the problem, not them being on the street. You're the problem because there is a solution, and it doesn't take you to have to reach in your pocket and pull out a bunch of money. It takes what you're already spending your money on to redirect and come out of the 10% that has 90% of the money and give back to 90% that's got splitting 10% of the money, and it ain't happening equally. You know, we have to change this narrative, and we have the ability, we the people have the ability everywhere on this planet to give someone a future, or we can take it away. We have that choice. And the thing is people judge people by the way they look. I love people to judge me the way I look, and then I want to have a conversation with you because I don't care if you got an MBA, a PhD, what your degree is. If you've got 5, 10 of them, I guarantee you I can carry a conversation with you because I've learned from those people with the MBAs and the PhDs because I do one thing. I listen and pay attention because what they paid for, they can give to me for free. And I want to give it back. And it's time for a give back, get back program. And that's what our kids are going to do and our prisoners are going to do. I'm going to give them a name, not a number. I'm going to give them a house, not a cell. But it's not their home. But they're going to help me get all the people in their city off the street and on their feet. And when they go back to the city, they're not going to be part of the problem. So their city can't look at them that way. They're going to look at them as the solution to the problems the city had before they came. But we got to give people an opportunity. We got to create unity. That's you and I together is why. Give opportunity. So every community giving an equal opportunity by having unity. And I live in the United States, but I've never seen the United States unite on nothing. It's time. You know, we don't have to have we're at a civil war, but we can win this civil war with civilization. Without weapons of mass destruction, by doing it with weapons of reconstruction, and that's the palm of your hand. And if you give me the palm of your hand, I'll show you peace on earth and give you a peace of mind, knowing that if anything goes wrong with your life, you're not alone.
Well, we can put a drill. Well, you put a drill gun in their hand and take the 45 Smith and Wesson out of their hand. Hold on, Chris. We got a. Somebody from the panhandle of Texas calling in. I know the panhandle well. I went to school in the panhandle. 806 area code, your mic is open.
Hi, how's it going? My name is William Burks. Are you able to hear me clearly? I'm in
a
high noise area
in the flat.
Absolutely, absolutely. I just wanted to jump on and say I definitely hear everything y'all are saying, especially earlier with the whole trade situation. I made it a huge point to help teach kids trades in my area for the future, which is a company that's geared towards giving the youth that knowledge and helping them become better citizens and, again, fix the future. I've been doing it in the panhandle for a few years now, and it is rough. I understand what you're saying. We got to take that 45 out of their hands and put a drill gun in their hands. It's kind of scary where the world might be if these kids don't start picking up tool sets and carpentry, et cetera, you know, trades, any random trade. I was listening when you said, you know, how could we get them more interested? And I think, well, since everyone's talking about getting a bag, I think we really need to explain to them the financial gains. You spoke about retirement and quite a few other things. But in the end, you know, I think speaking to them about the money would probably be the most useful in that way, because that's really all they care about now, sadly.
What part of Texas are you in right now, calling from?
I'm calling from Borger, Texas. We are 45 miles.
I've been to Borger. I've been up in that neck of the woods. I lived down there for 4 years. When I went to school there, it was West Texas State University. Now it's West Texas A&M University in Canyon, Texas. Yep. Borger is not that far from Canyon and Amarillo, that whole thing.
I had culture shock
when I first went down there, but I adjusted and stayed the whole 4 years.
It's something else, isn't it?
It is.
I'm actually from Colorado, so coming here, I definitely get the culture shock. And there's a lot of hard work out here, but sadly, you know, and this is something I don't think many people speak about. When you have so much wealth and so much money, the kids kind of get used to not having to work as hard to get to where they're going. And I don't know if that's the case anywhere else, but I've noticed that out here, that the kids tend to not really, you know, hey, I don't need this job. All I got to do is, you know, reach out to my rich uncle, my rich parents, this, that, the other, and keep it moving. And that is, COVID did not help the situation. I mean, there's restaurants and businesses closing just based off of not being able to staff, not off of, you know, having sales, having customers, having clientele. It's, hey, we can't find anybody that wants to work.
Right. The panhandle took me about a year to adjust, but I adjusted to it. There's a lot of, actually, the way I look at Texas, once you step outside of Dallas, the Dallas-Fort Worth area, the Houston metro area, San Antonio and Austin, guys, got opportunity all over that state.
Absolutely. There's a lot of money, a lot of land, and they're still kind of doing their thing old school. They haven't really moved into the new school. You know, Borger has his motto, if we don't have it, you don't need it. And that hasn't been beneficial.
Right.
So I've been going to city council meetings and becoming more involved and helping explain to them, you know, the importance of growth, you know, as far as the city is concerned, because everything is so diverse now and people are moving to so many different places. You know, the best thing you can do is try to build a mecca, try to build something for people to expect, not just a tourist attraction, you know what I mean? A whole new way of life is coming with all the technology, and that's what I've seen, you know?
Right. But you know what was interesting? Now, when I was first down there in 1976, coming from Washington, D.C., what I learned was, see, I call Borger and towns like that the real United States, and here's why. When I went there in 1976, there was cable television. Washington, D.C. and Baltimore, and those, they didn't have any cable television until maybe 10 or 12 or maybe 15 years later. And what I like about places like Borger, which once again I call the real United States, most people have never even heard of Borger, Texas, is because the entrepreneur can get in on the ground floor in those places and then build up a net. For instance, there are more Borger, Texases throughout this country than there are New York cities. The United States is made up of mostly small towns that most people have never heard of.
Absolutely.
And that's what Walmart did. Walmart, Ted Turner with cable television and all that, they built up a network of cities like Borger, Texas, because there's a lot of Borger, Texases out here, which is what I call the real United States. And then they go to the big markets like New York, Atlanta, Seattle. That's at the end. But it's just like in baseball. You hit a bunch of singles, you're going to get on base, and you'll make it to home plate. So that's why, just like the ladies that won last week, they went to a town called Toombsbury. Everybody's heard of Atlanta, Georgia. But very few people, including that people that live in Georgia, have heard of Toombsboro, Georgia. But they went a little bit outside of Toombsboro, Georgia, and then that's where they found now it's up to 502 acres of land. That's what I'm saying. If you're willing to venture, now you're in Borger, so you've expanded your comfort zone wherever you came from. But like, say that towns like that, that's where the that's where the action's at.
Absolutely. They just recently were at the Four Sixes Ranch shooting Yellowstone. A movie company just bought part of the college up in Amarillo. I started out working with Amarillo College on the Wrenches Scholarship. Basically, it's okay. A nonprofit car show that helps kids pay for school. So when you say there's opportunity out here, there's so much stuff that's not being done in these real American towns, as you say, that, I mean, honestly, I capitalized on it. I moved out here about 10 years ago. About 5 years into living here, I've seen just how much they needed, you know, the scarcity of things to do for the youth and just growth and technology. 3 years ago, I started For the Future, and it has just been growing. I mean, everything from parades to making the news. I mean, we're really, you know, bringing people together, unity, helping them understand diversity, and then helping explain the importance of educating the youth. That's probably the single.
Now, you said you moved there from Colorado?
Yes, from Pueblo, Colorado.
Okay, all right. Well, what you did was a smart move because a lot of people that are struggling, I mean, it's amazing what you can do if you just move, if you look 45 minutes, an hour, 2 hours away, or in your case, you got on a plane or whatever, and found Borger, Texas. I've got 10 acres of land.
6.5 hours.
How many?
6.5 hours.
All right. Well, you got to pay off on it. And a lot of people just don't want to do that. But
nope.
You can find, but I've got 10 acres of land in West Texas, down in Presidio County. I paid a total of $2,000 for it. Okay. I haven't gotten around to it yet, but I'll get, the thing is, there's no way I could have picked that up where I'm at right now. There's no way.
Absolutely.
And the nearest Walmart is like two and a half hours away from it. But there's a town in store, but I mean, there's a general store in town where I get everything I need when I do go there. But it's wherever you are listening right now, like say, look at opportunities, look at towns, give yourself a 60 minute to a 3 hour radius of wherever you live, and then you'll see a dramatic price dip in. You know, now mind you might have to pick up some new skills. You might have to learn how to become a carpenter. Okay. And basically just trial and error, just, you know, learn by doing. You know, it either that or the alternative is, because it with the inflation the way it is right now, at least from my point of view, is to be honest about it, I personally think, now, if you live in a Chicago, a Seattle, let's say Denver, Colorado, Miami, Florida, those places, if you're not bringing in $10,000 or $15,000 a month, now, you might not need that to live, but if you're going to be in those places, you need to be bringing in a heavier income. Whereas if you go to a Borger, Texas, okay, you might not need it. You won't need as much, and the opportunities will be less expensive to get into. But if a person's addicted to the big city, you know, there's not much I can say. Let's take another caller here. 602 area code. Your mic is open.
Good morning, LA. How you doing today, sir?
Better than terrific.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Oh, how y'all doing, man? I've been enjoying the topic. Shouts out to Porta Future Records and all the other winning team members that got the text message. Y'all in the right place. Y'all dropping a lot of deep knowledge today. Y'all should have your pads and pencils and taking notes. And that's all I got to say, man. I love the show. A lot of educational information. A lot of people that you actually taught, including myself. So keep doing what you do, bro.
Thank you. Now, give us, now you're on air two of a live stream, a podcast. Give us that, the title, call and number, the time.
Okay, well, it's Winning Team Wednesday. What we have is the winning team is collective of 300 business owners. We all realize there's a problem. We're bringing for change in the nation. Call me direct because I'm on 7 to 12 shows per day. My number is 602-478-1619. But the whole idea behind the winning team is us pouring our resources together, being useful in the community, and showing up when nobody else will.
Now, how many hours a day do you how many hours a day do you think you put in?
I go 23, brother. I seldom sleep, and when I sleep, my phone is always ringing. And I've been doing this 44 years. When I was 3 months, I was supposed to be in the radio station for 30 minutes. I wind up staying for 3 hours. So this is my life. This is what I do.
Okay, the reason why I asked that question, cause I know you put a lot of hours in, because we started off the program today with 996. If you don't work 996, others will do it. 996 is a philosophy that is practiced by some, not all, in China and Japan. And what 996 means, from 9 o'clock in the morning to 9 o'clock at night, you're working, or if you're a student, you're studying. Many people, many students in China and Japan, a lot of people say, how come they're so smart? It appears that they're smarter, but it's not really that. They're putting in more time.
Yes,
those
sir.
Students in those two countries put in about 12 hours of study a day. Now, they have a lunch break. They have a dinner break. They have an exercise break. And there's a mandatory nap break. But kids put in school 12 hours a day, 6 days a week. On the corporate level, not all companies now in Japan or China, but 9 o'clock in the morning to 9 o'clock in the night, they have their breaks. Many of them work, not only work at the factory, but they live at the factory along with their family. And they have social events, recreational events. They even get married at the plant. So China dwarfs every country, including the United States, when it comes to manufacturing, because they have a culture of making things. Here in the United States, we are a culture of consumers. If you want to turn things around, find something to, it can be, and I've talked about here on this program several times, Mignon Francois, we're working to get her on here as well. Mignon Francois, for those who don't know her, she was facing foreclosure. She's a mother of seven kids, and their lights were cut off, and she had no electricity in the house, no water in the house, with seven kids, mind you. And one day, a real estate agent knocked on the door and said, well, why are the lights out? Mignon said, well, I'm meditating. So the real estate agent came by and said, yo, you know those cupcakes that you've been passing around the neighborhood? Look, I got an open house in the neighborhood this afternoon. Could you whip up some cupcakes? I'll pay you $1 per cupcake. All Mignon had in her pocket was $5, and that was $5 to feed the family of seven kids plus her and her husband, nine people. I don't know how she did that, but she did anyway. So she took the $5, and I guess she had some social capital to use other people's stoves and ovens. And she went to the dollar store, got the ingredients or whatever. She made 60 cupcakes. She called a real estate agent. She got paid 60. So she turned $5 into $60 in a day. Later that week, she turned the $60. Oh, by the way, she took $5 out because she had to feed her family that night. She turned the $60 or $55 left. She turned that into $600 that week. She kept on doing that until she was able to get the lights cut back on, the water cut back on, and get the house out of foreclosure. Mignon Francois, a black woman, and you can look up her business online. It's called The Cupcake Collection. That's her website, thecupcakecollection.com. She's got videos on there where you hear this, hear her tell the story out of her mouth. She's turned that $5 into over $10 million. You got to be willing to step outside of your comfort zone. And I'm sure she employed the 996 method. You got to put in hours. There's no shortcut to it. Now, you might not. Now, you can figure out a way that if you partner up with people, you know, you get two or three or four partners, then you don't have to bear the brunt of the whole 12 hours by yourself or the whole 996 by yourself. But, you know, that's what she did. So you can apply that to anything that you're doing in life. Any special programs coming on today or this week on your live stream? I think Pastor Brown.
I went on mute. Y'all, we got a lot of special programs. I got people traveling around all across the country. And at the same time, once again, my phone number is 602-478-1619. Once you call me, I'll lock you in my phone, and I'll text out radio shows every day, just like it's my house. I want to get the callers involved, because without the callers, we can't make anything happen.
Okay.
So once again, and my phone number is 602-478-1619. Send me a text. Give me a call. And we'll put it together. I'm here for you, LA.
Good. Good. Any happenings in Borger, Texas that we need to know about?
Absolutely. We're getting ready to release a new collaborative album. Working with some artists out of Tulsa, Oklahoma, down in Houston, Texas. We're currently working on next year's run. We're planning on doing 10 events with the West Texas Region Sports Car Club of America, again, to benefit the youth for the Wrenches Scholarship. You can find my music and a little bit of information on the car shows at the number 4TH, the number 3, FUTUR3, at YouTube.com. There's also an official For the Future page on Facebook. You can also send me an email at the number 4TH, the number 3, FUTUR, the number 3, at gmail.com if you want to be involved. If you'd like to donate to our nonprofit organization to help us put these shows on for the kids, you can donate at hashtag the number 4TH, the number 3, FUTUR, the number 3. And for the most part, the events are going to run through the year. We're working on getting connected throughout the panhandle of Texas up into Oklahoma and Colorado with our sponsors at AutoZone and O'Reilly's.
What are the ages of the kids?
I'm sorry, now?
What are the ages of the age range for the children?
Oh, absolutely. We set them up age friendly. We try to do positive music. It is absolutely all ages. We have food vendors. The goal, again, is to bring fathers closer to their sons, i.e. working on the cars, and mothers closer to their daughters, you know, listening to the music, coming out, enjoying some good cuisine, and just being part of the community. So we definitely do all-ages events. We do Carmageddon with the Amarillo College. That's our biggest event of the year. That is definitely a family-friendly, fun event where we have everything from sometimes water slides, bounce houses, et cetera. And the best part about it is we do it free for the community as a way to bring them together.
Okay, I like that father-son thing. You just may remember, there was a young man, and people can look him up online. He made the cover of Time magazine some years ago when he was 11 years old. Unfortunately, he was dead at 11 years old. If you go to any search engine and put in Yummy, Y-U-M-M-Y, Chicago, or Time Magazine, Yummy. Yummy was a young man that was in, he lived in Chicago, and he joined a gang in Chicago. And, Yummy did some stuff, some foul stuff, because he didn't have any male guidance. and two of his fellow gang members who were also at the time young men. They're a little bit older than Yummy, but Yummy was 11 years old. He was younger than them. They killed him. But I figure with men and girls to a certain degree, as Chris stated earlier, you know, take the loaded gun out of their hand with the bullets in it and replace it with a drill gun or a nail gun and teach them how to build, a birdhouse, a doghouse, a tiny house, teach them how to build something. And that can turn things around. So,
it can change the world.
Exactly. Exactly. So,
with what we're doing now, we're working on getting involved with Home Depot and Home Improvement. I'd like to shout out the winning team and Pastor Don Green for also helping connect us with the 300 and the winning team, so that way we can make this a worldwide adventure, something international across the U.S. It's starting out small, but it's moving rapidly. If anyone needs my information for contact, that is 806-886-8214. Again, that is 806-886-8214.
Okay, and we'll be in touch with you. And Chris, Chris, you still there?
Yes, sir.
Chris, I'm gonna let you wind it up for today, because I like when you go into, you know, the gun thing, exchanging one gun for another. Could you wrap it up on that with your organization and how people can get in touch with you?
Yes. My organization is Housing Our People Everywhere. I like to give people a double dose of hope. Humans on planet Earth, housing our people everywhere. I'm going to give you a triple this morning. Honoring our people everywhere. People need to be lifted up. They don't need to be torn down. I don't care what you've ever went through in the past. We do not have to go through it in the future. You don't have to go through it in the future. My website is hopeforhousing.com or .org. We are a 501c3 charity, 100% tax deductible. But what we want to do is show people that what bills you're paying can actually be coming into your community to change what you see, because we've partnered with Fortune 500 companies for the electric and gas, for your phone bills, for your internet, but also Amazon, Walmart, Starbucks, Home Depot, Lowe's, you name it, over 250 Fortune 500 companies that you can all be spending money at every day, but also get cash back and make a donation toward this project to give your children a legacy to live on forever. We can take the guns out of people's hands. We just started a professional football team in the south side of Chicago. It's called the Southside Raging Bulls, from 18 to 40-year-olds. These are gangbangers. These are people that was living by a gun, by a pistol grip. And if you have to live by a pistol grip, I want to show you that I'll give you a pistol grip, but I need you to aim straight, pull the trigger, and every time you do, you're going to save a life. But the gun that you're giving me that you don't have to worry about carrying anymore is also saving lives. Now let's talk about everything else that that gun's going to do for you. That gun is going to give you a home that you will never be thrown out of. It'll give you a home that won't burn, won't absorb water. It's stronger, termite-free, mold-resistant, seismic, recyclable. Build it without a dumpster, build it cheaper than wood, and get a 60% discount on insurance versus a wooden home. I built a home right where the eye came across for Hurricane Katrina in 2006 in Burlington, Mississippi. This house saves $11,000 a year in insurance versus the wooden one next door to it. It's 1,000 square foot smaller. In 2010, we showed 25 people. I went and showed 25 people how to get a home in 30 minutes or less that was flooded. And then I asked them all, after we did 14 homes by 12 o'clock, I said, will you please go show 25 people what I just showed you? And I asked each one of them to do it. We did 17,000 homes in 60 days. But we also were able to show all of the natural disaster relief people how to do something working together in unison. and we walk through this situation and have it all done so eloquently, but at the same time put the material out there so the only people that have to touch it is the clam bucket trucks as they come by and pick it up, but they pick up the recycling material because that's what we use. We use the washers, dryers, refrigerators, stoves, water heaters, and cars from these natural disasters to rebuild them. In 2011, I built a home in the middle of the woods with cordless screw guns with five people that never touched the material before in their life, and it was deemed the best-built home in the city with over 100,000 houses by every building inspector. It's 1,800 square foot, three bedroom, two bath, and the attic is the same temperature as the house, and the garage is too, and it melts the snow off the driveway and sidewalk. That house happens to be 100% on the meter, so the highest electric bill's been $45 up to last year. I'm not sure what it is now because the rates have doubled, more than doubled, and the gas bill's been $25 for 11 years. So we want to show people that we can take them completely off the grid. We have 70 people working with one of our collaborations in Tennessee. They are building four complete 8-foot by 20-foot tiny homes that are ready to move into, ready to live, bathroom, kitchen, butcher block, countertop, beautiful works of art. They don't all look the same. They're definitely different. Some of them have lofts, some of them don't. But we can make them any size. Doesn't matter, but these are homes that can be put anywhere. We just had three of them ride through Hurricane Ian, did not have a scratch on them. Everything around them had damage, but these homes still stood. And these were on trailers. Now, I want to put them on a foundation, and this is where we can start, take off and start with one as strong as granite. And but it's put them on a foundation and start a foundation that knowing that your community is going to not do nothing but grow and stop the recidivism going back to prison of the 95%, because if they don't have a support system when they get out, they're going to go back. And it's just the way we have set it up in society, but it's all private industry and it's money that we're paying out for those private industries to continue to get rich. And I want to be able to change that narrative and not be at poverty anymore, but bring it to prosper. And that's where we take our, we're only as strong as our weakest link, and we pick up our chain with a hand up, and we mend it. And when we stretch that chain back out, it's made of titanium, and it's going to withstand it. But we don't always have to have it pulled tight either. We can have some slack in it because not everybody's problem is their own problem.
Right. All right, Chris. Well, thanks for that. We're going to wrap it up for today. If you guys are on Clubhouse, you can look me up on Clubhouse. Our club on Clubhouse is titled Don't Sell Mama's House. Don't Sell Mama's House. That's our name on Clubhouse, which is an audio app. And Chris is on. That's how I met Chris. He was on Clubhouse as well. Chris, what you have a club on Clubhouse?
I do. It's called Hope, Housing Our People Everywhere, and everybody's welcome to join that club. You can look me up, Chris Collins. I'm on there. I'm on Instagram. You need to look at that because I started a youth program back in July, and they went out and outbuilt the adults that was already building on site when they showed up. And they never touched a saw, but it's what they saw because they built something that will last 1,000 years, knowing the house next door still don't have trusses on it, but this one here is going to be able to be moved into quicker. You know, our children are amazing, and I want to see what they dream because every dream is a reality that hasn't happened yet. And I can't wait to see what they have to come up with.
Chris, what were the ages of those young people?
They were between 15 and 18.
Okay. What's the youngest you think you can come down?
Well, I mean, I can teach any kid They all have something to do. They all can be a positive purpose.
Right.
I want to teach our first grade through eighth grade to design the homes for high school students, the parole prisoners, and the job creation build. But it's working with the college students and getting all of their community service hours, getting their internship hours, and them getting an education of how to be able to actually communicate with people. And that's the thing. We don't communicate right as a race, you know. They'll drive by you. You could be laying on the ground needing help, and they're not going to stop because they're afraid something else might happen. And the thing is if you make people suffer, you know, you never know what they're going to do. And that's why I always tell people, don't always say what's on your mind. You might want to cuss me out and everything else, but you don't have to. You don't have to degrade me. It's totally up to you. You have a choice. But people like to hear their own voice. And
right.
If you tearing me down, did it really make you feel better? The one thing that it did is it let me know who you are. And, you know, I did a Facebook Live this morning. I'm Chris Collins on Facebook. You'll see my picture. You'll see a logo that will have a peace sign on the planet Earth being held in a set of hands. And what it means is peace on Earth and it's in your hands. But I am redesigning that because I heard that the peace symbol that I used, and it made sense because it looked like it was the cross upside down with broken arms. You know, that's the peace sign and encircled. And I don't want anything negative going toward our children. I want them to be able to receive. I don't want any blocking happening. I'm always seeing walls, and that's why I went out and I got legislation passed throughout the nation so that we can utilize what we have now and turn people into homeowners instead of slumlords that they're paying. And, you know, I worked with Ben Carson, but if you're on Section 8 anywhere in this country, I can turn you into a homeowner. If any investors out there that have property and want to do things, we can actually use HUD money to build new construction affordable housing for the first time in history. We need to know that. I got a legislation passed working with Governor Newsom in California, and they're building 42,000 steel-framed homes for the homeless, but they're temporary. But they're 84 square feet, and they don't have a bathroom. So we designed a stat house superior to a tent. And we have a superior to a trailer. The tent has a bathroom. The trailer has a kitchen. But it don't have to be on a trailer. It could be on a foundation. And we can also extend it and go any direction we can build onto it. We've got now the greenhouses and the tiny house or a house. There's so much that we have that we just want to offer. And all I need to know is just like our workshops, anybody that wants to book us, I will come and do a workshop. But it is going to be something to where we are going to change a life while we're there. And it only takes, you know, a couple hours of your time. If we spend a day, we might be able to save 10 or 12 or 100. It depends on how many of you want to show up to a workshop. And I'm willing to go anywhere in the country. So I know he's been talking about this in past episodes. I don't think we mentioned it today, but, you know, maybe I'll let him run over that. But thank you.
Yeah, Chris and I are getting together. We're going to collab on work. He's up in Illinois. I'm in Florida, but we're going to bring him here to Florida. Then we'll do, because we got some people boots on the ground in Florida as well as Illinois, where we'll be. Some of the stuff that he's talked about we'll be doing. So, well, as soon as we talk the details on that, we'll announce it right here. And we're both on Clubhouse. That's how we met. So if you haven't downloaded that audio app, there's a lot of good people on that app. Of course, everything's on Clubhouse. But I'll put it that way. Totally uncensored and unregulated. But which is good. That's what I like. But like I said, our name on there is our club on there is, or room as they call them on Clubhouse, is Don't Sell Mama's House. That's all about generational wealth. But like he said, everything he's talking about, we're going to do a collab on that. So we'll announce it as soon as we get that organized. Thank you, Chris. Thank you all for calling in. And thank everybody else for listening. On that note, everybody have a good rest of the day.